morning, brother John.
Good morning, Jerry. You're from St. Louis.
Broadcasting from St. Louis.
Everybody's probably saying, well, why are you in St. Louis this week? You did your podcast on St. Louis last week. Like, you're a week late. Well, maybe not. Because things continue to happen in St. Louis. Last week, we, you know, the podcast included a section on the fact that St. Louis, in St. Louis, there was a policeman by the name of Jason Stockley who had shot a convicted drug dealer named Lamar Smith. And there was, and so he was on trial for first degree murder, and Jason Stockley got out, and there was a bunch of riots. Now, I wouldn't call them riots. They were pretty much protests that included a little bit of property damage, you know, a few injuries, but there were no deaths, and there wasn't any what I call a full-scale looting, et cetera, and all that good stuff. But there is there's another story here. There's a follow-up story.
Aftermath. Well, first of all, we're ready to talk about this because we have on our Bro Show t-shirt.
Oh, sugar. I forgot all about that. Yeah.
We got on our t-shirts. So we're girded for battle. That's what we are.
Yeah, I'm going to wear
ready
this.
Ready to roll.
I'm going to wear this t-shirt today to the ball game. So I'm going to be a billboard there at the ballpark walking around. And I'm sure I'll get a lot of people saying, what the heck is that all about? And I get an opportunity to explain.
That's right. You become an evangelist. That's wonderful. Okay,
so
and we got new t-shirts.
Oh yeah, that's
on
right.
Way,
we got
buddy.
More. We have more.
We got new t-shirts on the way. We had a short campaign just so you and I could have t-shirts that said "My brother is doing fine," and it kind of caught on. And our brother Jeff bought one, and you know we got it in the family. We got the word out. People seem to like the t-shirt. It's still out there. If people want to get one. We'll leave it up for maybe another 4 or 5 days or a week. And if enough people want it, it'll reinvigorate the campaign and more people can get the t-shirt. But it's a pretty cool t-shirt. And it's also the banner of our podcast now. I put it in there so that people could see it. You can click the link, go to shirt.bro.show. We have a new URL there, nice and easy. And our site is www.bro.show. Also, nice and cool and easy. We got to buy a new domain. If you use the old domain, thebro.show, that still works. You're good. Or shirt.bro. Yeah, that'll work. You're good. I changed all the links in all our episodes. All our episodes are now numbered. We have a new theme song. So season 2 is roaring. We got a roaring start, a little time delayed, but we're here now.
Yes.
Okay. That's
and
it.
I would say that the brothers are doing fine. I have been an accountant, had a rather narrow focus in terms of what that meant, but it seems to me, after giving it some thought, it has a very general meaning. You know, he's my brother. Everybody, you know, has got a brother.
Yeah.
If they don't have a, you know, like a biological brother, they have somebody they consider their close friend they might call bro. So the good news is, you know, you don't have to, there's a lot of good reasons to have a shirt like this.
Yeah, and it could be referred to brotherhood, which is more universal, which includes sisterhood, that kind of thing. Anyways, okay, so
back to St. Louis.
To
I'm afraid
were.
I'm
yeah,
still
St.
here.
Louis.
I'm sorry.
Oh God.
Yeah, well, that's that. I escape tomorrow. Don't worry. So, the fact is that we were talking about Jason Stockley and the fact that he was acquitted and walked in terms of after shooting Lamar Smith, the drug dealer, 5 times while he's still in his car. We don't need to go into all that detail. So, sure enough. There was a protest, a rather quiet protest, but the police did a very good job, and I'm sure they did. But they were a little bit heavy-handed in terms of the way they treated the protesters, including throwing tear gas while they were in their SWAT trucks, parading around the north side of St. Louis, whether these people were protesting. They just had been, if you happen to be on a corner and there were a lot of blacks on a corner, the police took it upon themselves to throw tear gas their direction. So as a result, a new set of protests have started in which people are protesting the fact that the protest, the police weren't treating them unfairly. And so, sure, St. Louis has got to react to that in only a way that St. Louis can.
Oh, this is crazy. This is crazy. I've heard this. This is nuts. I just got to warn the listeners.
Yeah. In order to quell the riots, the Board of Aldermen decided to honor the drug dealer who got shot with a plaque that they presented to his parents in front of the whole board. And then had, of course, the mayor, the woman mayor there. And she gives hugs to the parents who've lost their son. And the head of the alderman, he does the same. So that, sure enough, what we got now is we've got the police passing a resolution honoring a convicted drug dealer. Of course, the rationale here, in a rather warped way, is that whether the victim of the policeman, Jason Stockley, was a drug dealer, a congressman, or whatever, that he basically brought the consciousness of what's going on in terms of the police to the attention of everybody. So therefore, he should be honored no matter what he did in order to do this. So, it's crazy. Of course, guess who's upset about that?
The police.
The police are.
Yeah.
So the aldermen.
Do they do as a response to that?
A response to that, they've got the quick fix. What they're going to do now is the aldermen are going to honor the police for the wonderful work that they did during the protests. So this morning, I got I got my newspaper out, and the headline says, "Police honor delayed." Now the aldermen realize that if they honor the police, that there's going to be another protest by the protesters, because the police basically treated them unfairly. So right now the aldermen, I guess, are picking their noses, scratching their asses, and don't know what the hell to do.
Wow. This is stunning.
I mean,
our hometown, buddy.
Yeah, hey, listen, I'll tell you. You say, well, what are we going to do? Give the idiot award to the aldermen? Well, you know what? I'm afraid the protesters.
There's an award.
The protesters exactly would not get the award, but let's say they'd finish a close second, because here's a little piece of information about the protesters. They, as a means of the protest, are calling for three things. They're calling for the resignation of the police chief. By the way, the police chief is interim. He's an interim police chief. He doesn't have the job. So they're asking for the resignation of a person who basically doesn't have the police chief title. They're asking for the resignation of the judge who's already announced his retirement. And they're asking for the resignation of the mayor, who's the only buddy, is one of the few people who are supporting the protesters.
Wow.
So what they're doing is they're just looking for something to protest, and they don't really care whether it makes any sense or not in some regard. So I have to kind of say, you know what, Alderman, you're screwed up. Protesters, you're not exactly hanging there with a complete sanity either. So so that's one way the St. Louis got into the news that I've read about as a follow-up. The second one is that we know all over the Midwest, cities are just, you know, kissing the feet of the president of Amazon as they try to get the second headquarters, the second headquarters that would be built would include the employment of 50,000 people. So Amazon is out there saying, we need a new second headquarters, and who wants to do it and who's willing to give us, you know, the store in order to do that?
Right.
So Chicago, you know, most of the cities are strutting their things, what they've got to offer. In Chicago's done that. Of course, Chicago goes a step away. How much do you want us to pay you in order to do it?
Ooh,
and we'll do it any way we can. It doesn't have to be above the table, below the table. You know, we all have our ways of getting things. And Chicago has their way. Other cities are, you know, all of them are touting how great they are. St. Louis officially is doing a comparable thing. But there is a groundswell here in St. Louis that says that, you know what, our chances of getting this are nil, zip, zilch. There's no way that we're going to get Amazon to come to St. Louis.
Yeah. Oh, what's their strategy then?
Their strategy is to say, Amazon, become the world's best humanitarian. We're offering you nothing. Come here and save us. Make our city better by coming to here. And guess what? Wow. If that isn't good enough, if you don't think St. Louis is bad enough, we're going to throw in East St. Louis too. You can help them. And then by helping East St. Louis, you're helping Illinois, which has got the worst damn financial status of all the states in the union. So, wow. I mean, it's wow. just, I wonder, why did I leave St. Louis? And now I know. Jeez.
Yep.
Well, one of many reasons.
Yep. Must be something, John, there must be something in the water.
I don't know what it is, but I'm drinking Gatorade. That's all I got to say.
Okay. I think you're choosing the noble and wise path. So, don't drink the water if you go to St. Louis, because obviously it's got a lot of stupid in it.
Oh. So yeah. That's, I think we've talked, we don't want to talk any more about this. Or
no.
Like you said,
we'll get depressed.
Get depressed or else we'll get inflicted with whatever they got. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to be careful. Be careful, John.
So we need a new subject.
I think we do. We've got some stuff going on here that's very interesting. The end point of today's episode is what I will just say in two words, the knee.
Yeah.
That is the movement to protest the treatment of people of color by law enforcement and the judicial system. That's kind of a mouthful. So the knee, that's how I think of it in my mind. That's our end point where we're headed. Now we're going to get there. In order to get there, we're going to uncover little known facts, important facts, I believe. Don't you, John?
Well, I think that it's important. You know, it's amazing when we talk about things such as the National Anthem and the Star-Spangled Banner, we learn how much we really don't know.
Yes.
You know, and that's, I think, what makes it interesting. You know, the fact that we are that we stand during sporting events at the beginning to honor our flag,
really,
honor our country.
We don't know anything. We don't know anything about this. We hardly know anything about the song itself.
Yeah. So the song,
or the history of protesting at sporting events. People have a short memory, but it's rich. All these things are like filled. We could do a 2-hour show on this easily, but we're not gonna.
No, we're going to try to keep it down to an hour and a half.
That's exactly right. So buckle up, everybody.
Okay, so let's start by talking about the sports angle as it relates to the Star-Spangled Banner. Because if you take a look at the Star-Spangled Banner in baseball, they're linked for way, 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 way back. We can go back to 1862, where we actually have a baseball game, a professional baseball game, at which the Star-Spangled Banner has been played. But at this point, the Star-Spangled Banner is not even official national anthem. It's right up there in the running with America the Beautiful and America, et cetera. But it's, you know, that's the first time that it's noted. There are several other times between 1862 and 1918 in which it's been cited that the national anthem has been, the Star-Spangled Banner has been played. The event that really seals the deal in terms of the start and making this a part of the baseball game goes back to the World Series in September of 1918 during World War I. Now, just to give you a little background, baseball back in 1918, at the start of the season, we're in the throes of the world. The U.S. is in World War I pretty heavy. Baseball doesn't even know if they're going to be able to continue because they haven't gotten the official word yet whether the ball players are going to be subjected to the draft or not. So they're kind of holding their breath as they play baseball games, just wondering if that might be the last one they play that season. Somewhere during the season, in August it was actually, they get the good word from the government. Baseball gets the good word that they will be able to continue baseball through Labor Day. And after that, it's all up for grabs as to what's going to happen to the players. They could get drafted, etc. Major League Baseball reacts by deciding to then play the World Series early for the first time. So for the first time and only time in the history of the World Series, the baseball's World Series, the whole World Series, not just one game, but the whole World Series is played in September, and it actually starts on September 5th. So,
okay,
we got the World Series. We got the first game. That first game is being played in Chicago, and during that game, they decide that they're going to play the national anthem. It's kind of a, and the thing is that one of the, there are two factors that really stimulate and motivate and make this all happen in terms of the national anthem being before these events, sporting events, is number one, technology. And up to this point, what's going to happen is that we're going to have bands. Bands are going to come and play the national anthem early on. Bands, though, are expensive. So as a result, they're only done, the Star Spangled Banner, in this case, is for a special event. We're going to find that that's going to be the case, that until technology allows us to have speakers at the ballparks, et cetera. The other thing that seems to motivate the development of the Star Spangled Banner at these sporting events is warfare or disaster. Take your pick. So what happened is that this game is a ho-hum game. It's like 1-0 and it's just kind of funny. Babe Ruth is a pitcher in this game and records a 1-0 shutout. You know, Babe.
Wow.
Yeah. So Babe was a pitcher before he was a big time hitter. And I think most people
know
that.
I didn't know he pitched a shutout. That's crazy.
Well, the thing is that Babe Ruth held pitching records, World Series records through that were eventually eclipsed in the 60s. But he had some notoriety as a pitcher with the Boston Red Sox before he became a New York Yankee.
Wow.
This game is going along and it's just boom, it's a 1-0 game, not too much excitement on the field. And in the seventh inning is when they decide that the Chicago Cubs decide that what they're going to do is they're going to play as part of when we're standing up for the seventh inning stretch, which is something that's a whole nother tradition. The seventh inning stretch, they then play the Star Spangled Banner. So
okay. The
fact is, here's the pieces that you have going coming together. One, you've got them playing the Star Spangled Banner at a band. You've got them all standing already because of the seventh inning stretch. And what happens is a couple of things. Number one, the fans start singing the Star Spangled Banner. And two, there is one player on the field who is currently a soldier who has been given a furlough for a couple days, who's playing on the field, and he decides to salute the flag during the playing. Okay.
So it's
these two things that kind of bring it on. Now you have to understand that although we find on an unofficial basis, the Star Spangled Banner is quite often used as a beginning or during a special event, whether it be sports or not. The actual movement to make it the national anthem ran into its own little trail. And what happens in the 20s is everybody after this event, people say, hey, come on, let's make it the national anthem. Let's make it. Well, not only do we have other contenders for it, but the fact is that probably the one factor that we're all aware of that made it difficult to make it the national anthem is it's difficult to sing. It takes
Correct. An
octave, almost an octave and a half in order for you to sing it. So it isn't like, you know, just Joe Blow off the street is going to get up there in front of the crowd and sing the song. You know,
what's interesting about that is that it's based, the tune is based on an English pub drinking song, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when we think of Francis Scott Key, we'll talk about, you know, that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute. But the point is that how do they sing it over in those bars and stuff in England? It's a hard song to sing. I guess they're good singers.
No, they're not good singers. Here's what happens. What happens is that you basically drink a little bit of beer and, you know, your body relax, and that includes your vocal cords.
Oh.
So if you have enough beverage, not too much, but just enough that you can get your vocal cords relaxed, that'll actually punch up your range. And by that punch up, they're able to sing the song.
Okay.
You heard
it
first here.
Okay. I needed that. You heard it first here. Breaking news.
But there's one thing you're not going to hear, and that is the national anthem.
That's correct. We're not singing it.
It's too early.
No, it's too early, and we got our own theme song, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So what happens is by 1931, President Herbert Hoover, even though prior to that, Woodrow Wilson was a big advocate of getting this done, but he couldn't quite finish it off. So it wasn't until 1931 that President Herbert Hoover signed the law establishing the song as the official national anthem of the United States. And the nice little push that kind of pushed it over the edge that made it happen, John Philip Sousa. Always good to get an entertainer in there to help you out.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we have? We got an official song. We have baseball that's done it on a sporadic basis during special events. When does the Star Spangled Banner, our national anthem, become the regular thing we do before every game? Well,
yeah.
War comes around again in 1941. And sure enough, by the end of 1941, every baseball game is started with the playing of the Star Spangled Banner at the games. Because at this point, we've got the technology. The ballparks are now set up with speakers, and you don't have to go out and buy a band, although occasionally, you know, they
special
would use
events
bands.
Still have that.
Yeah, and the fact is that right now it's amazing. We use, obviously, the technology today, but we usually don't use recorded music at these ballparks. What we do is we find people, either they can be well-known entertainers or they can be just very good singers that will come out. And I've been to a few ball games where not very good singers. And I've been to ball games where they don't know the lyrics, but that's another story.
Another story.
Okay. So what we have now is we've got the national anthem, and we can go a little bit, we can go into the history of pro football, because it's a very fascinating one in terms of that. But before we do that, we always talk about film.
Right? That's correct. We do. We do. We like to talk about film, and there is a film that is associated with uncovering some of the little known facts about the song itself, the background of it. It's good. It's a PBS style documentary, and the name of it is John.
So Proudly We Hail, and
which is also
the thing is that I decided, you know, I'm not going to let something like this go. What I did is I thought, I'm going to Google So Proudly We Hail, and found out that there is, and by the end of my search through the internet, I found out that there have been innumerable songs that have used verses from the national anthem as titles to movies. And I think the most common one is Home of the Brave. It's a movie in 1949. That I would recommend, because it's a kind of a before its time. It deals with the issue of race during World War II. It stars Lloyd Bridges and an actor who probably, if he would have lived, would have been the Sidney Poitier of the day. He's actually the groundbreaker when it comes to going from the step and fetch it roles to the ones that we treat blacks as human beings, you know, during movies. His name is James Edward. So it's a well worth movie. But in addition to that, there is a movie called So Proudly We Hail, made in 1943, that starred Claudette Colbert, and it deals with the role that nurses played in the war. And so the important roles in it are all nurses, are all females, starring with Claudette, and it also includes Paulette Goddard, who was nominated for an Academy Award. In fact, the movie itself, So Proudly We Hail, 43, had four nominations. It didn't win any awards, but it had four nominations. And just a little trivia tidbit, since the men in the role were rather subordinate to the women, George Superman Reeves played the husband of Claudette Colbert. So if you want to see George without his cape, you can go see this movie, So Proudly We Hail, made in 1943. Yeah. But
and we've
let's
get
back
covered
to the
from
movie
here
at
to,
hand that we're going to
we,
talk about.
Yeah, we've already covered From Here to Eternity. That's another George Reeves role.
Yes. Yeah, there's another one you've seen with a Hawaiian shirt on.
Yeah, it's good. So what's interesting about this is the two movies you cited just now, notice what they're doing. They're shining a light on people who have been marginalized.
Right.
Which is interesting. Or underappreciated. Don't they? So
they do.
This
women
is
and blacks.
Okay. So now that's interesting. In lieu of several things, in lieu of the knee and what's going on with the knee, which we'll get to shortly, but also the fact that now we have a documentary by the same name that was done very recently in the last couple of years, And it's PBS-style documentary. It's well-sourced. Yeah, they have authentic, incredible people speaking about the national anthem and what led up to it, some of the struggle to make it become the national anthem, who championed it, all that stuff. And I'm not going to cover all the details of that. But to me, what's interesting about it is very few people know what that song is actually about. And even fewer people know that there's a third verse that is never sung because it brings up the subject of slavery. And it doesn't do it in a great light at all. So, background on the war. This is the War of 1812. This is the British, you know, a little pissed off that they lost their colonies here. And so they're gonna take another shot at it. They're going to come back. And the War of 1812, and I'm no historian, so I don't have all the details. But what I do know is they did something interesting. They had a strategy where they like divide and conquer, by the way. That's their favorite thing, the British. And they decided, well, we'll do a variation of that where we will recruit slaves and offer them their freedom if they fight for us. And we'll do something else. We'll start recruiting American Indians and get them to fight for us because they're on the ground and they really know how to fight and they're pretty good guerrilla warfare people. So let's recruit them and we'll offer them their nations back, some of their nations, so they aren't treated so poorly. And so this is appealing to the Indians. This is appealing to the blacks. And so the third verse of the song is that these wretched people, these slaves who defected to the British are, you know, getting their asses handed to them and the flag is still standing. And so, hey, they made the wrong choice. And, you know, it's
mind boggling because the fact is that this verse is basically saying, look, slaves, Indians, you sold out on your country, of which, of course, you're slaves.
Yeah. Guess what?
We're not going to give you freedom, but you just basically sold out. So,
is Francis Scott Key, is he from St. Louis by chance? That sounds like St. Louis.
No.
No? Okay, well, anyway. Despite his origins. He wrote this thing as a poem, and like we said before, it got turned into a song by stealing from the British, again, the tune. And they've done this before with America and other stuff. It's God Save the Queen, basically. But, you know, I don't know if that's a thumb in the eye of the British or that's a lack of creativity or now they're pissed off about the War of 1812. So,
who knows? So maybe that's Americans. Maybe that's why the War of 1812 happened because they're just ticked off because we keep ripping them off. Who knows?
Wow, that's it. That's it. The hit. You heard it here first. You'll never hear it anywhere
else. What's funny about this is that you mentioned the third verse of the national anthem. The fact is that we only sing the first. So there's actually four verses altogether. It's kind of amazing because a lot of times during World War II, you would know whether during war, whether you were confronted in a situation where you were the enemy or not. The enemy could have been dressed in civilian clothing. So quite often soldiers would use means by which to quiz somebody to make sure that they were an American.
Yep.
And one of the ways that they would do that was ask them to sing the second stanza of the national anthem.
Wow.
Well, no good American knows that.
Right. That's funny. I didn't know that. That's a good one, John. Wow.
Yeah, there were tricks to the trade in order to try to figure out what was going on. Because what the problem was that when they were basically spies or whatever, when they were recruiting them, they taught them certain things like the Star Spangled Banner. And they went a little too far and had them learn the second verse in addition to the first. And that was a big mistake.
Yeah, well, Germans always overdo it, don't they? They just no impulse control. Oh, well.
Yeah,
well, another topic.
Yeah, so I think that...
Sorry, Germans. I'm mostly German. I can say that.
When we take a look at this documentary, I mean, the amazing thing is that they do a really good job on the front end describing, you know, the origin of the song. But then what they do is they take there's a historic black college in Baltimore, Morgan State. So the people making the documentary decided that what they would do is they would get the reaction of students to the second verse. And I mean,
by the way, good location, because that's very close to where the action was, where the song was created.
I think, yeah, that was the idea. The idea was let's keep it close to home. So since the song's there in Baltimore, let's just go out to a university and we'll go to a black college, and we'll check it out. And I call them historic black colleges because there's a lot of them around the country still. I mean, and I guess we've kind of, rather than talk about the implications that they were part of the segregation, we now consider them to be historic, you know.
Yeah.
Not segregated.
Yeah, that's another topic. Yeah, exactly. That's another topic.
Crazy. Oh, well.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of skeletons in our national closet,
but
don't we?
These students that they got, I'll tell you, if you threw something like that in front of me, I wouldn't have been as eloquent and they were doing it in a rather calm manner. This isn't like they're jumping up and down, going nuts, because part of the problem is that they were kind of perplexed in a way, because it's hard as you take a look at these words. When you take a look at the third verse, you're confronted with a couple of words that are, you say, well, what, these don't fit exactly. One of them was hireling and one of them was slave. So you wouldn't exactly expect. And then the sentence is not very complimentary. It's more condescending. It sort of like implies the fact that you've sold out. The slaves have sold out. So you've got to kind of stretch it in order to, it isn't like it's, you know, shouting to the world, hey, the slaves, you sold out in this third.
No, it's
verse.
Not.
But
it, no, you, it have is, to, you have to decode it. You have, yeah. It's old English. So it's not that easy.
But I
handled it well.
You know, so what's nice about this it's a 15-minute documentary. It does a great job at the beginning of, you can learn a little history about the Star Spangled Banner. And two, you get a lot about this third stanza. 15 minutes, you can bring it up on, what's that called again?
Vimeo.
It's free. You go on the internet. And it's a nice little touch. We recommend it. You get a chance to take a look at it. So
yeah, the War of 1812 is interesting because of the British strategy to try and empower some of the marginalized groups within the United States in order to say, they got smart. They decided not to just line up with the red coats and shoot at people. They decided, hey, we lost these colonies because we behaved like British. We should behave more like Americans. In fact, we should behave more like Indians. So they started getting smart, you know, which is, cool. And there's a whole rich background to this thing that stretches all over. The War of 1812, as John said, is very interesting. The history, it's really amazing what happened there. And some of you, it's
you
hard
think
to
about,
read this.
The thing about the War of 1812, you normally think, you know, of a winner and a loser. The War of 1812 was a draw. Because when you take a look at it, the U.S. had
everybody
a chance
got hurt.
Of taking, yeah, every it, nobody gained anything because it all ended up being the same it was before. So what happens here is the British don't get back the colonies, and the United States doesn't get Canada, is what it boils down to.
Right. So, and the Indians don't get back any dignity or any of their lands.
Well, wait a minute.
The
blacks
are still
slaves. It's a draw. And the Indians never. They always lose, so I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's a given. But one good thing did come out of it. Probably the only 100% Indian war chief or leader, or whatever you want to call him, who really rose to prominence during this period and made his mark was Tecumseh, or Tecumseh is how you really say his name. And so he really came forward at this time, and he was the guy who spearheaded all the Indian activities and got people tribes from all over the country to unite and march on Detroit. And he did it in an amazing way. He was an amazing public speaker. This man learned how to speak English by going back to the land where he was born and lived that was taken from him. And he learned it from a little girl who lived there. And so he spoke English. He was smarter than hell. And he was a great strategist. And people will read the history of Tecumseh and see that he really united people who were not prone to be united. Indians, 500 nations in this country before we got here, and they were very culturally different. They all spoke different languages. They had their own thing, and that was probably a good thing. But he united them for this one event. He used all kinds of interesting ways to do it. He, his brother, turns out, was a shaman and had two visions. And so his brother was always accurate with this stuff. So Tecumseh used these things. He said, "You'll know when to come to Detroit because you will feel me stamp the ground with my foot. Wherever I am, you'll feel it." Because his brother had a premonition about the earthquake that took place down near Cape Girardeau.
Yes.
The Madrid amazing fault. Stuff. The Madrid fault. He did all kinds of amazing stuff like that. He told people, you know, "You'll know I'm speaking the truth because," and he named the date when there would be a solar eclipse. And so he had a huge following because of this. Jeez. He was a genius. Even the presidents who parlayed with him at certain points, all to a man said, "This guy could have been a president. He's really got the stuff." So you wonder why there's so many cities named Tecumseh, why one of the major heavy equipment makers of the United States was called Tecumseh. This is why, and this may have never happened except for the War of 1812. So
wow.
They didn't get anything out of it, the Indians, but they got Tecumseh.
Well, as we take a look at the War of 1812, you've gone down a road. I think you better come back up that road.
Oh, we got to stop. We got to stop here. Keep going.
Yes, we do. Sure, let's go. Could. If I didn't stop you, you would. I know. Okay.
Yeah, that's the kettle calling the pot black, buddy.
Jeez, come on! You're on Indians. I like baseball. Okay.
Okay.
I would say that Indian is wearing a lot of hats, except he doesn't wear a hat.
Correct. Headdress.
Yeah, headdress. Excuse me. I'm glad you clarified that. Okay. But,
okay.
You know, the fact is that what we've done is we know that there's an event that's taking place, the knee, and we're going to get there, aren't we? We're going to get to the knee eventually.
We are going to get there.
Gee whiz. Okay, so how are we going to get there? I mean, the fact is that we've talked about, you know, the national anthem. So now where do these, you know, sports participants, the players themselves, whether they be baseball, football, whatever. And football has
Olympians.
Had an interesting. Oh, the Cleveland Indians or the Boston Braves?
No, Olympians. I said.
Oh, Olympians. Oh, I thought we were going to start talking about the Cleveland or whatever.
No. nice one.
So, what about the Olympians?
Well, yeah, in Mexico.
Oh,
famous Black Power Fist. So that there's a lot of things that lead up to the knee that people are unaware of that have taken place in various sporting events. And in the sport culture. And it's not like a recent thing. This has been going on for a while.
I mean, I remember 1968 when the two guys got up there, the two black sprinters. And it was, you know, but in the 60s were a time when it wouldn't be unusual. I mean,
there's
a lot of protesting done in terms of the war and it, in terms of the, of the rights of the blacks and et cetera. It's, you know, one of the things I've done here in St. Louis is every city has their history of what they've done for desegregation. And St. Louis has got some amazing exhibits and things, protest things that they did. You could go to any of the southern cities. I've gone to Birmingham. It's not considered a hotbed for what you call, you know, helping the blacks.
Protesting
and all that. I mean, they're not Selma, they're not Montgomery, but they have got a rich history. And I'll tell you, it's amazing. Or Memphis, you could think, well, Memphis is one of the places you think about. But there's all these cities have something to offer in terms of what they've done to make the movement work and to progress onward. But, you know, we've got 1968.
Sports.
And we then move up, and right now.
Well, actually, I'll take you back a little bit. I'm thinking Jackie Robinson and his autobiography, where he talked about the national anthem.
Yeah, Jackie. You know, I mean, we could take a look at the. that's a whole nother gigantic subject of the participation of blacks in professional sports, whether it be basketball,
which we
football,
talked about
baseball. Yeah, we have. So,
but he talked about specifically the national anthem and how he felt really uncomfortable standing and saluting the flag or putting his hand on his heart because he did not feel like he was part of America. He said, black people are not part of this, you know, and I'm not part of this. And he just felt really conflicted about it and angry. It's in his autobiography. So there's that.
Yes, you're right. There are many different examples of how this developed through history. And Robinson, 1968, moving onward, we could cite other things that have happened as, you know, it's sort of like Kurt Flood. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I am a well-paid slave.
Wow.
You know, that was the name of his book, one of his books. So yeah, there is a progression of this stuff. And right now it is hot. It is super hot. And it's super hot because of Colin Kaepernick. Last year was the first one who, and the only one that was noted, that would take the knee, would not stand for the national anthem. And now in the new year, since, you know, the question is, well, you know, yeah, but national football, you know, the NFL has had a whole year to think, or off season to think about this. And everybody's talking about, well, how are we going to address this new year? And sure enough, the football season just started a couple of weeks ago, and it has been a hot item. And, you know,
because they did not hire him. They would not hire him back, right?
They would not hire who back?
Kaepernick.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole issue because when it comes to football, Colin Kaepernick back, you know, two or three years ago was the savior for the San Francisco Giants. And since then, he has then come a pretty lousy quarterback. So there's a question as to whether, you know, he should, you know, is worthy of, you know, continuing to play. And I didn't know that the 49ers had basically dropped him as a hot potato. But, you know, he's just not what he was before.
Yeah, San Francisco 49ers rather than the Giants.
I'm sorry, did I say the Giants? I meant the 49ers.
Yeah.
Baseball. Get them mixed up with the baseball team, the San Francisco Giants. Oh, boy.
John likes baseball.
Oh, do I? That's an understatement. Okay, so.
Yeah.
But talk a little bit about the history of the football players actually being out there.
Yeah.
To be able to even kneel.
Well, this is one of those things where be careful what you ask for. Because there came a point first of all, usually the football players were in the locker room during the national anthem, and then they came out on the field.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're in the locker room.
That changed.
Blasted by their coaches, hollering and screaming at them to play well, rather than out there, you know, and be part of the ceremony of the national anthem. I mean, that was their role. Their role was to get hollered at, not to be out there saluting. And, you know, standing. But that changed. What caused that to change?
In effect, somewhat, it was 2001 because that's when 9/11 happened. And so after 9/11, spontaneously, I believe, a lot of the clubs, if not all of them, the players started coming out for the national anthem.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's almost like peer pressure. You know, what happens is, you know what, 9/11 just happened. I'm going out there. Everybody says, gee, if I get caught still in the locker room, I'm going to look very patriotic. I better get out there, too. But so before you know it, during 2009-11, after that, it's right, you know, as the football season started, we've got all the football players standing out there. Just as, you know, you could take baseball did extra things because of 9/11. Football's extra thing was to get their butts out of the locker room and onto the field and standing there for the national anthem.
So that's how it started. And it petered out after that, though.
It did. So it's not like they continued to do it. They went back into the locker room after, you know, kind of all the hoopla was over with, you know, after a couple months, et cetera, maybe 2002. So what's the next thing that causes this to happen, Jerry?
In 2009, I believe.
Yeah. Yes, 2009.
The DOD said, hey, We've got all these wars going on. We need more recruits. So let's pay the NFL to have their guys come out. And a few other things, too. They had some other things. But let's just focus on this one thing. That's part of the deal that the DOD made with NFL was, let's get your guys back out there, and we'll show some respect for our men in uniform. They did other things, too, to reinforce this. But that's right. They started paid patriotism, which raised some ire once. Not always known, but it was known in the last year.
Yes. Now, the thing is that, so if we want to go back and blame something or someone for this kneeling starting, we've got to go to the Department of Defense. They're correct. The culprits here. They're
again,
the ones
yeah.
who started all this. Because
yes.
they're the ones who paid the NFL players to go out there so they had a chance to protest. I mean, if they took a
yes,
knee in the
did.
Locker room, who's going to know it?
Yep. Nobody.
Okay. So pay patriotism is another subject. Baseball has its part in it. And the fact is that once John McCain was the leader in the Senate who brought this forth to the point that it shamed the sports teams and the Department of Defense into basically stopping this. I mean, to give you a really crazy example, baseball staged something, what they would do. Here's an example of how they were, and they were part of this too, MLB. They would actually have a soldier return home. He would then come and throw out the first pitch. And they'd have maybe his son then be the catcher as an honor. But what they didn't know, or they were staging, was the fact that they were acting like these two people didn't know. In other words, the son didn't know the father was back. And so, and guess what? So they're doing this, and it looks so great on TV. You say, wow, isn't that neat?
All staged.
And then
all
you
staged.
Find it's all staged, and you find out that MLB is getting paid to do that so that they can improve recruitment.
Wow.
Oh, dear. This is something that's recent. We're talking within the last 5 years. It appears that it's been discontinued, as far as I know, but who knows? I mean,
we don't really know.
We don't really know. But it appears that it's been discontinued since 2015 because of McCain.
However, now these guys are all stuck out there, and they have to keep doing it.
Right.
So they're all out there. And not that the players ever got paid a penny for doing it, but you know, their owners did. The NFL got paid. So
yep.
Now they're out there and they can't really stop doing it because they'll look unpatriotic.
Right.
Now we've got Black Lives Matter starts coming up because of all the police brutality of people of color. And it's real. It exists. This is not a figment of anyone's imagination. Now the police have a tough job. I'm going to say that right off bat. And not all policemen are engaged in this. But enough of them are so that it is a problem. So,
right.
You know, let's deal with the problem, but we're not dealing with the problem. Everybody's screwing it up, and we covered that on the last show. Let's not go over that again. But
okay,
what's
up here,
though? What's a guy going to do? What's a guy
going
to do?
Well, first thing is we got the dilemma that the owners have. The owners, you know, in other words, what do we have here? Do we have paid employees that we're supposed to be instructing as to what they're doing? And basically, you're on the clock when you're out there. Don't forget it. When you're out there standing for the national anthem, you're on the clock. That
That's
means
right.
that as your employer, I can tell you what to do. Part of your job, I'm going to tell you, you need to stand up there and sit and be still, salute that flag, or put your doggone hand over your heart and act like a patriotic human being. That's what the employer
sounds like. Wait. That sounds like paid patriotism. We got back to that again.
I didn't realize how patriotic I am. What? Come on.
Exactly. We're not getting paid. We're patriotic. Wow.
Oh, dear. Or does the owner take a look at it and say, well, gee whiz, if I don't in some way kind of act like at least I'm not maybe for what they're doing, but at least I'm willing to support or acknowledge what they're doing as okay. So the owners have a dilemma. What are they going
to do? Oh, yeah. Well, this is the first of many that they're about to encounter.
So
right. I give some examples of, I think Jerry Jones is a good one.
Oh,
of
man.
How they have reacted to this.
I'll tell you something. This is one thing I will say. God bless President Trump. Because this guy has brought more issues to the forefront of our country than I think any other president that I can think of. He just, you know, he's a rabble rouser. He's doing all this crazy stuff, some people say. But what's happened here is he has really, we went from Colin Kaepernick almost by himself doing this protest, which let's just say this for what it is. It is respectful. He did not hold his fist up in the air, give anyone the finger, or moon the flag, which, of course, you know, sounds like something I might do. But anyway,
people don't realize how
kind of respectful.
Accurate you are portraying yourself.
I'm sorry. I didn't hear that. And so, bad connection, John. So what we're going to do is, let's just think about this for a second. He is essentially genuflecting. So this is kind of a respectful looking pose, you know. So he got kind of smart about this. At first he sat on the bench, but then he decided to go forward, stand in line with his boys, and kneel. And this is a pretty smart thing to do, I think, because not just from a strategy point of view, it looks good. The visibility is good, except that everybody knows what he's doing. He's protesting. And very few people follow suit until our marvelous president gave a speech in Alabama not too long ago. And this number went from a few people on the knee to 270 people on the knee overnight, literally overnight. Stunning, stunning. And how did they do it? Wow. They have so many different ways of doing this. Each club decided on their own how they would handle this situation. First of all the owners, even the ones who gave millions to Trump and his campaign and his inauguration and all that stuff, they went with the players. And it's not just economic self-interest either. They were outraged. And, you know, the thing is, this stuff, it rubs off. If you're an owner, no matter how white you are and how rich you are, if your workforce are highly paid athletes, whether they're black or white, you start getting into their mindset. It rubs off on you. And sure enough, it did. Jerry Jones, the whitest, you know, the guy from Little Rock, Arkansas, this guy really led the march because what he did was super smart. He said, let's link arms before the national anthem starts to show our solidarity and how we're an unbroken chain, that we support ending this brutality that's going on and the mistreatment of people of color and blacks in particular. And then, a few seconds after the song starts, you know, I got it backwards. They linked arms, took a knee, and then a few seconds after the song started, they all stood up, arms still linked. Right, John?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Those are the facts.
They were on the fence.
On the fence, showing... not on the fence.
Okay.
Solidarity. And other clubs did it different ways. A couple clubs, their guys stayed in the locker room. College team, they stayed in the locker room. That was their way of doing it. Other people did kind of a hybrid, a different kind of hybrid than Jerry Jones did. Some of them, the black players would take a knee. The white players, or people who didn't feel like taking a knee, stood behind them and put their hands on their shoulders, showing, I'm part of this, and I'm also a patriot. So that was kind of interesting. You know, some guys didn't stand behind and do that. Some people stood in line and did that. So there's so many variations of this that have taken place that it really shows, number one, everyone did something. Number two, people are so creative. How did they come up with all this stuff? It's so interesting to me. And it was effective, very effective. Wouldn't you say, John?
A couple of things I'd like to say about this. Number one, I do think the awareness is in the way that it's been handled and the various the variations on the way that it's demonstrated is pretty interesting. And it's like you said, it's ingenious that they're able to come up with all this. But I think what I need to point out and is that we need to understand that Donald Trump, as much as he, you know, was able to kind of bring this forth as he's in the White House waving his flag and complaining about the fact that these guys are kneeling, we have to understand that this is something that he kind of staged, while what he should have been doing was checking out to see exactly what's happening down in Puerto Rico. So his priority was the kneeling versus Puerto Rico. And I think that needs to be, I need to point that out. I can't resist doing that.
Well, he's been dinged on that pretty hard by a lot of people.
Yeah, and so I just felt the need to give the other side, which, you know, in terms of what he was actually doing, and as much as, you know, it's nice to see that he's done this a little piece to kind of raise, you know, like he's good at, in other words, stirring up, agitating, whatever, he's good at that sort of stuff in order to bring a cause out. You know, he's done it several times. But I wish he would kind of work on that less and maybe just a little bit more on some really big time problems.
Like Korea.
Korea is a good example. Puerto Rico is an example. There's a lot out there.
Yeah, and he should also read these bills that he's promoting before he promotes them so he knows what's in them. I don't think he has any idea.
God, you're asking.
No clue.
Now you're starting to ask the president to do too much.
I am. You're right, John.
You're asking him to read.
Yeah. I am.
He has enough trouble just tweeting, okay?
Okay. All right. I'm gonna give you that. And also, I'm going to just say one more thing. I think it's a little unfair about this Puerto Rico thing because it's a terrible situation. We'll have another show on Puerto Rico someday, soon, hopefully. And it's a terrible situation that is impossible, almost impossible to solve. So, you know, FEMA is doing an all-out effort. And, you know, he's done the right things, really, but he's not going to get credit for it because he's creating so much fervor around the knee. And so this is, he's his own worst enemy on this one. And the fact that he is so rabid about this issue, and it happens that the people he's shouting at and calling sons of bitches are black. And just weeks before he's commenting on Charlottesville, that these neo-Nazis, some of them are good guys. Come on.
God, we're starting to go down a road here. And the temptation is, believe me, I'm right there with you. I mean, I want to take the next step down the road. I really do.
Yeah.
I just want to say, and you're going to then want to say, and I want to say whatever, but the fact is that FEMA is.
Well, you're the big
really
brother. You got the last word.
FEMA has been the hero in Puerto Rico. There's no doubt.
I mean,
They have. They have been acknowledged. Everybody sees them as the shining knight here. And you're right. It's an impossible situation. It's a unprecedented disaster that's taken place down there in that island. And the fact is that people, you know, I hesitate to complain because when you start complaining about when somebody's doing something wrong, you should have a solution.
Of course I do, but
point, you do, and you're going to have to save that damn solution for another episode. I'm sorry.
I will. I'm going to keep my mouth shut.
No, it's okay. But we know that you think out of the box.
I'm with you. I agree with you. I'm with you. Full support. Big brother.
So I think we've done a pretty good job of going over a lot of information here. I hope we haven't been information overload, which I have a tendency to do. As you are doing, you do a good job of trying to keep me under control, and I'm not doing a very good job of keeping you under control. But that's a whole nother story.
Yep. Brothers. Diversity.
Oh, yes. And listen,
we
I'm
going to
escape
different.
St. Louis tomorrow. Okay, I will be out of here.
Right,
I'll be back home, and I'm looking forward to it.
And, hey, I'll take a knee for you.
There's no end to it.
Really, there isn't. Okay. Well, hey, we've had fun. We got it done in less than an hour and a half, dude. It's 64 minutes, it was about 60 minutes.
All good.
Hey, ho, let's go. Hey, ho, let's go. Hey.